Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 509, 58 degrees with those storms moving through our area. We have tornado warnings to our east, and we have another line of storms to our west. Even though, you know, it may be a little calm now, we do have other storms headed our way in about a half an hour that have already spurned up some tornado warnings themselves. So just be aware that we have another line of storms coming our way. You can give us a call at 570-883-0098, and you can text us that same number. Let me go to the phone now. We have Brian on the Back Mountain Chamber on Career Fair. Brian, how you doing?
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking the call.
No problem.
So this week is May the 4th to the 10th is the National Small Business Week. And I'm with the Back Mountain Chamber, and we're hoping to generate some support for our local small businesses through a business expo and a career fair that we're having tomorrow at this time from 4 to 6 p.m. And it's at the Apple Tree Terrace located on Pioneer Avenue in Dallas. And we're asking people to bring their business cards if they're in business and or a resume so they can get out and meet some of our local Back Mountain area businesses. And there will be complimentary coffee and tea and cash bar and some hors d'oeuvres. And all the proceeds are going to benefit the Back Mountain baseball. There's a 50-50 and some drawings. And we'll have about 30 or so businesses there. And more information is available at the backmountainchamber.org.
It sounds like a great networking event. Again, it's 4 to 6 tomorrow at Apple Tree Tavern?
Apple Tree Terrace at Newberry Estates.
All right. From 4 to 6 tomorrow. And they could just show up with a stack of their business cards and join in, huh?
Yes, absolutely. It's free and open to the public, and we're hoping that we'll have a great showing. And we're just looking forward to a way to network our businesses in the Back Mountain and surrounding areas and give people an opportunity to get out and meet each other and maybe find a new career.
So anybody looking for a job as well can show up and mingle with local small businesses if that's what they want to do. Maybe have their resume in hand or at least be able to email it to someone.
Sure. And it's actually the first event like this where it's a business expo and a career fair or a job fair rolled into one. So we're going to give it a shot and see how it goes.
That sounds like a good event. So if you're a small business, maybe looking for some employees, it'd be a great thing to get to and network with your fellow businesses. You're looking for a job or maybe looking to better your career, you know, head out there and talk to the local businesses. Maybe have some ideas that can help them and join the crew.
Absolutely.
All right, Brian, I appreciate you letting us know about the event.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And you know what? Great events like that. Keep it local. Local businesses looking for local employees. It's always a good thing. And that's 4 to 6 tomorrow at Apple Tree Terrace. Check it out. So it does look like that Pakistan is committing to retaliate. If not, it's already in the planning. But I've been monitoring, you know, what's coming out of that as well. And it looks like this is now the number one story. I'm seeing here official Pakistan response just begun. Pakistan just fired a BRV ballistic missile towards India. BRV is an air-to-air missile capable of engaging over a range of about 40 kilometers or more and carries a large warhead. So it looks like there is the back and forth already happening between India and Pakistan, so we'll monitor that. What I talked about earlier is a government official made some statements that really it's at the point where you don't know what to believe. I'm kind of taking it with a grain of salt, but you also have to take the person's background and say, how true is this? And, you know, we've heard rumors about this, but a government official claims that the U.S. built a secret $21 trillion underground city for rich and powerful to live if near extinction event happens. The federal government, and this is what's being alleged, the federal government has secretly spent trillions building an elaborate network of subterranean cities where rich, powerful government officials can shelter during the near extinction event, a former Bush White House official claimed in a recent interview. About 170 such bunkers have been built across the country since 1998. Including some resting beneath the oceans off the U.S. coasts, 74-year-old Catherine Austin Fitz told Tucker Carlson during a recent appearance on his podcast. It's preparation for the catastrophe, Fitz said, according to news outlets. Fitz, who served as Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development under President George H.W. Bush from 1989 to 1990. Now, you have to look at who this is. This is a top government official, the Assistant Secretary for Housing and Urban Development. You would have to assume that they would have knowledge and be involved if something like this was being built. But she claims it did. Claims $21 trillion in taxpayer dollars were funneled to the project between 1998 and 2015. She provided no evidence for her claims, but said in 2017 report from Michigan State University economist Mark Skidmore indicated that much unauthorized spending had been uncovered across the Departments of Defense and Housing and Urban Development during that time. After 2 years of combing through records related to already documented underground military bases, Fitz said she also looked into allegations of a wider bunker network. Comparing her research against the missing cache, Fitz said that she was able to make a guess about how many facilities there really are. She claimed 170 only applied to bases on U.S. soil and around its coastline, alleging that more exist across the world. And the bases are connected by an elaborate transportation system, she added, while claiming they are powered by a secret energy system known only to the military. I'm convinced that this energy exists. If you look at a lot of the really fast ships flying around the planet, they're not using classical electricity or power sources, she said, in an apparent reference to a spat of bizarre, unidentified aerial phenomenon supposedly flying around the skies in recent years. Those alleged bases are used just not for doomsday bunkers for elites, the government official claimed, but also as places for the government to operate secret operations like a secret space program. The existence of elaborate underground government bases and bunkers is no secret. During the Cold War, the Cheyenne Mountain Complex was built inside the Colorado Mountains to serve as a hardened base of operations for various military operations. It's currently used by the U.S. Space Force, and from 1950 through 1990, a bunker intended to house all of Congress in the event of a calamity was built and operated in total secrecy beneath the bustling Greenbrier Resort in West Virginia. Fitz, who works as an investment banker before joining the Bush administration, also floated a number of other outlandish ideas while speaking, including that the COVID-19 vaccine had DNA-modifying ingredients and that shadowy global cabal is trying to use mind control to enslave the world, according to reports. So take it for what it's worth. I mean, is this just a former government employee that's lost her marbles, or is she onto something here? I mean, we've all heard the conspiracy theories. We've all heard the things. Now, you have to look at, just here in Pennsylvania, this place, this deep mine where they found all these records for government employees here in Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania. Is that built for something other than just housing documents? One would have to think. I mean, I can tell you with certainty that after certain incidents, they are hardened bunkers in a lot of cities across America. The one we had during 9/11 was uninhabitable because it was destroyed rather quickly, or at least compromised rather quickly, because it was built exactly where the plane struck. So, again, you take where it's coming from with a grain of salt. Is there a little truth to it? I mean, are we to think that there aren't bunkers across the nation to house, you know, our top military personnel? There obviously has to be. But if you look back at 9/11, where they flew the president around and took him to different locations back and forth, you know, why not take him to one of those locations during that time where there was a lot of unknown? So, again, it's something that's been put out there. You would think the Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development may have a little inside information, but to where the interview kind of strayed after that, you have to say, well, Is this just being thrown out there for attention, or is there some validity to it? Well, that's for you to decide. But the information's there, so we pass it along to you. It also appears that President Trump has just made his first comments in regards to this ongoing now military conflict between India and Pakistan, where he said, "It's a shame. We just heard about it walking into the Oval Office. They've been fighting for decades, centuries, actually. I hope this ends quickly." And then he's been brought to a briefing on the situation. And we'll continue to monitor that situation. It's 521 here at WILK. It's time for 2020 Traffic and Weather Together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. We have been talking about the escalation in what's now ongoing military strikes between India and Pakistan that had started just a little while ago, with India launching 9 strikes inside Pakistani-controlled area. There are reports that Pakistani aircraft have scrambled in response to this. And again, trying to sort through, this is coming from across the world, trying to sort through what's valid and what's not as far as what has taken place is, trying to get it through valid news sources. I did look into, what kind of pacts and agreements the U.S. does have with both Pakistan and India. And it appears we both have military, joint military pacts with both nations. And as far as if there is a conflict between the two nations, our stance is more of a de-escalation and diplomacy type stance, where the U.S. consistently urges both India and Pakistan to avoid escalation, resolve tensions through dialogue, particularly given the nuclear capabilities of both nations. Following the April 22nd, which is what today's attack is in response to, April 22nd's terrorist attack in Indian-administered Kashmir, which killed 26 civilians and heightened tensions. U.S. officials, including Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Vice President J.D. Vance, called for de-escalation and cooperation to address terrorism. Rubio held separate calls with India's foreign minister and the Pakistani prime minister, emphasizing the need to maintain peace and security in the South Asia area, and condemning the attack while urging Pakistan to work with India. Now, the fact that India has again attacked Pakistan facilities, be it terrorist targets or what they claim to be terrorist targets, is still sovereign Pakistani land. And it appears Pakistan is going or in the midst of retaliating for that. So the U.S. stance is de-escalation and diplomacy, playing the middle person and negotiator here. But these are two powerful nations. These are two nuclear-capable nations. And, it appears to be a deteriorating situation. And hopefully, after there's a flex on both sides, there's a pause for calm before this gets any bigger than it can be. It is the middle of the night there. It is like 12 or 1 in the morning, India-Pakistani time. Maybe 1 or 2 in the morning. They're a little ahead further. So, I'll monitor the situation, and it looks like all major news outlets are also doing the same. So I'm sure this is just the beginning of this story, which India is calling Operation Sindoor against 9 terrorist infrastructures in Pakistan. Pakistan is appearing to are in the process of retaliating for what they call an incursion on their sovereign territory. Some news closer to home is our Department of Defense has directed a 20% cut in top military leader positions. That's flag officers, generals, and admirals. There has been an ongoing problem for years now of a bloated upper echelon system. And this is not just in our military. We've seen this in school districts. We've seen this everywhere. But there are far too many chiefs and not as many Indians as far as the military goes. So the Department of Defense, under the direction of the administration, says they are going to cut flag officers again, which is general and admirals, for all of its military services by 20%. That still leaves a lot more than we had, probably double the amount that we had during World War II. So this is a good thing. getting rid of bloat and bureaucracy is a good thing. The fact that you have people at that level with their staff simply justifying their existence slows down military readiness. Because if you're justifying your job and you say, well, this has to come through me before it gets approved to here, and it's going through multiple levels where it really doesn't have to, you're delaying response. You are delaying getting the assets to these troops on the ground that they need. You're delaying answers because it has to go through so many layers of authority that don't need to exist, that are basically there simply for bloated existence of their own doing. So this is a good thing. So hopefully they follow through on this, because if you talk, if you know members in the military, your sons and daughters serving the military, some of the biggest problem is the bloat of the upper echelon of our military, delaying answers, delaying what needs to be done simply because they need to justify their existence. It's 5:32 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's 5:36, 58 degrees. Let me go to the phone now. We have Jim from Wilkes-Barre on the Pentagon. Jim.
Yeah, I've got the receipts, Rob. World War II, we had about 12.3 million active duty troops. We had 2,000 flag officers. Today, we've got about 1.3 million active duty troops. We've got about 900 flag officers. In World War II, the number of flag officers to troops was one flag officer to about every 7,000 troops. Today, it's one flag officer for every 1,444 troops. We're fat and happy, Rob.
Yeah. How many did we have during World War II?
We had 12.3 million active duty troops, 2,000 officers, one star and above.
Okay.
In today, we have 1.3 million active duty troops and 900 officers, one star and above. The ratio in World War II was one troop for about, or one flag officer for every 6,500 or 6,800 troops. Today, it's one flag officer for every 1,444 troops.
All right.
So, yeah, I mean, we're bloated big time.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt indeed. And it's a welcome advance from mostly anyone in the military, except for the flag officers.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure we can get rid of, you know, whatever flag officer it was that was in charge of proper use of pronouns. I don't think anybody's going to miss them. You know, and we're increasingly relying more and more on our reserve units. So, I mean, if they're going to focus someplace, I'd be putting a bit more money in our reserve units, because it seems to me like whenever the ball goes up, man, they're the first ones out of the gate.
Our reserve and National Guard have definitely played a different role over the past 20 years than they normally have. I think we've seen that. I think they've seen it more than anything, and definitely deserve more of a funding avenue and more of a centerpiece, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm thinking of increased training as well. As it stands today, our guys in the reserves get, I believe it's 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks over the course of a year. It may be about time to step that up a little bit. I mean, you can make it voluntary, you know, maybe, you know, every other month it's 2 weekends and 3 weeks at some point. Because, I mean, you know, these guys, I mean, they're called out all the time.
Well, that's it. They've constantly been activated more and more, and their training is included in that because they have to do workups before they get deployed. So that's kind of worked into when they're called a lot of times. But I definitely hear what you're saying.
You know, and I mean, these guys are leaving jobs and families and all kind of stuff behind when they get called up. And they go happily, willingly. I mean, I haven't heard that many complaints from people
who were in the reserves who got called up.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, it's also not the time as it was 20 years ago where jobs were firing them and people were, you know, they weren't coming back to jobs, where the legal protections for these men and women serving in our reserves and National Guards have gotten a ton more protection, which has been an outstanding thing. You know, I've had several work for me and they were called out to deploy, and it, you know, it's just the way it is. Yeah. As an employer, you got to deal with it.
But anyway, back to this whole thing about flag officers and 20% layoff. You know, we got a lot of chair warmers. And, I mean, I've seen estimates like for every combat arms guy, infantry, something like that, we got 8 or 10 people behind him.
Oh, no doubt.
We got more tail than teeth.
Yeah, indeed we do. Indeed we do. Jim, I appreciate your call with the numbers.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. It's 5:41 here at WILK, time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back. As we start to wind down the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, it's been a busy day here. Weather and wars in Pakistan and India and all sorts of underground cities. What else is going to happen? There is some video circling on the internet now that says that shows in Bangor, Northampton County, just to the southeast of us, there was a video of a tornado taken. And it says it's from Bangor, Northampton County, Pennsylvania. It appears there's a small tornado on the ground at that location. So there probably was, in fact, a tornado. So just be careful out there. And I'm also seeing that the Pakistani Prime Minister has made a statement saying Pakistan has every right to give a full and strong response to this act of war imposed by India. And a full response is being given. Doesn't sound too measured, does it? Prime Minister of Pakistan. Pakistan has every right to give full and strong response to this act of war imposed by India. And a full response is being given. So is there a response already in the process? I guess we'll see. So we'll monitor that, and I'm sure there'll be a lot more. There is now video coming out of the injured and destruction from the strikes, and if there is a response, I'm sure we will start hearing it shortly as I'm just looking at the thing, there. Cartels, the Mexican-U.S. border down in Texas, the southwest border area. Drugs is not the only thing that they're in the process of. It's really like a real-world Fast and the Furious going on down there, where they are tapping in and stealing oil as well. The U.S. Treasury Department is cracking down on Mexican cartel crude oil smuggling in Texas and along the southwest border. The department's Office of Foreign Assets Control on Thursday, the OFAC, the OFAC, sanctioned multiple Mexican nationals and Mexico-based entities involved in drug trafficking and fuel theft network connected to the Mexican cartel. In February, the Trump administration designated the cartels and Mexican cartels as transnational criminal organizations, as foreign terrorist organizations, and designated global terrorists. Crude oil smuggling is interconnected with a slew of criminal activities, including fentanyl trafficking and a range of violent crimes. It's considered the most significant non-drug revenue source for Mexican cartels and other illicit actors, OFAC said. The thieves use a variety of means to steal fuel and crude oil from Mexico's state-owned energy company, Pemex, Petróleos Mexicanos, included bribing and threatening Pemex employees, illegally drilling taps into pipelines, stealing from refineries, and hijacking tanker trucks. They are literally tapping directly into the pipelines. Their operations are facilitating rampant violence and corruption across Mexico, and undercutting legitimate oil and natural gas companies in the United States. Stolen fuel is sold on the black market in Mexico and Central America through unregulated roadside fuel stops and cartel-controlled gas stations. It's also smuggled into the U.S. by brokers who label it as waste oil or hazardous material to evade detection. Stolen crude oil is then sold and shipped to oil and natural gas companies and refineries in Texas and nationwide, as well as Japan, India, Africa, and other countries. Investigators found it's sold at a significant discount and illicit proceeds are sent back to the FTOs and drug cartels. According to law enforcement estimates, the U.S.-based importers earn roughly $5 million for each oil tanker shipment of crude oil to foreign jurisdictions, with multiple tankers leaving Texas ports every month. Most purchasing shipments are likely unaware they've been stolen, per the government. Those sanctioned this week include one of the cartel leaders. Mexican national Cesar Morfin of, I'm not even going to try to announce the town he's from, for his alleged role in transporting, importing, and distributing narcotics, including fentanyl, heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, marijuana, fentanyl, methamphetamine precursor chemicals sourced from China to the U.S. His older brother was also sanctioned for his alleged role in narcotics trafficking. Both Pimiento brothers are on the 10 most wanted lists in Texas and Mexico, published by the U.S. Customs and Border Protection and the Mexican government. Their younger brother, Remigo Morfin, is also sanctioned for alleged drug trafficking operating out of Helgado, Mexico. Mexican national Cesar Morfin was also sanctioned for his role in drug trafficking, as were two of his family members and business associates. As Trump administration border security efforts shut down illegal entries, the Pimiento's brother network refocused their efforts to smuggling crude oil into the U.S., OFAC said. Given his control over port and entry bridges between the Mexican and Texas border regions, Pimiento also charges fees to any trucks moving crude into the United States via these routes. He and his subordinates also allegedly falsify official customs documents to facilitate cross-border smuggling of stolen crude oil, investigators allege. Because there is no money now in human smuggling, because it's more difficult, it's been put to a stop, because we are interdicting the largest drug seizures we've ever had in the history, the largest fentanyl interdiction was just made yesterday in the history of the United States, they are moving to oil, fuel. And think about it. They are legally, well, not legally, they are transporting it via legal shipments in a tanker truck saying it's waste oil. And it's being sent over. Unless you're doing a sampling of the oil there at the border, how would you know if it's waste oil or not? And you're bringing it to the U.S. to sell to waste oil facilities that use it for other means. But yet, then once it's in, they're bringing it to a refinery and they're selling it for cheaper. So the cartels, the cartel members are adapting, branching out their illegal operations to where now fuel oil is their largest non-narcotic revenue source that they have. It says, in recent years, fuel theft in Mexico, including crude oil smuggling, has become the most significant non-illicit drug revenue source for the cartels and enables them to sustain their global criminal enterprises and drug trafficking operations in the United States, the alert says. The alert provides an overview of methodologies and financial typologies associated with cartel crude oil smuggling, including red flag indicators that reminds financial institutions of Bank Secrecy Act reporting requirements. But since the Trump administration has designated the Mexican cartels as transnational criminal organizations, the Treasury Department, as well as other U.S. entities like the Department of Defense, have more resources at their fingertips to deal with this. So it just goes to show you how quickly the cartels can maneuver and shift their operations to different aspects. We saw while the border was porous, where they cracked down on certain areas of the border, the cartels immediately moved to different areas of the border to get their smuggling, their drug operations, and everything else through. Now, this is one of their new entities. The president has been in talks with the president of Mexico to allow our military to interdict with these terrorist cartel operations. And until there's some sort of agreement there where either the Mexican military is going to do it or we're going to do it, this is continue to be a cat and mouse game. But it just goes to show how operational these cartels are. They are not by any means a ragtag small operation. They have the same military equipment a lot of times as our on-the-ground military members, the same weaponry, the same surveillance technology, the use of drones, the use of night vision. The underground tunnels that we've found have been extremely non-primitive, for lack of a better term. So it just goes to show that there's some real time, basically Fast and the Furious. And reading through this article, these cartel-run gas stations that they have set up are no small operation. I mean, if you think about, I don't know if you've ever been to a Buc-ee's, but if you've never been to a Buc-ee's gas station down south, I highly recommend you go to one and stop. There are none up here, though there should be. Buc-ee's is the equivalent to a Walmart with 100 gas pumps in front of it. So it's basically your Sheetz, but instead of just a convenience store inside, it's more like a Walmart and has everything. And by everything, I mean everything. With anywhere from 60 to 100 gas pumps. So that's what a Buc-ee's is. And that's what these cartels set up with these stolen entities. I mean, they're just not taking a gas tanker and bringing it somewhere and pumping it out of the tank. They have infrastructure set up for this where the Mexican military, military police, the government want no part of it. They are allowed to do their operations because they don't want their families in jeopardy. They don't want to be targeted by the cartels. So looking at some of these gas stations, these drug smuggling cartel gas stations, they are no small operations. And you have to realize they are taking dozens of these tankers at a time for a constant fill on these gas stations, and they're making a fortune by running them. It's one of their drug operations, one of their money-making laundering operations. It's 5:57 here at WILK. We'll be back to close out the show in just a minute. Well, that's it for the show today on this Tuesday, May 6th. We'll be back tomorrow. Remember, you need your real ID starting tomorrow if you're going anywhere. We will continue to monitor the India-Pakistan confrontation that's ongoing right now. I would pay attention to your news tonight to see any updates there. It looks like the worst of the weather has passed us. There have been some videos of some tornadoes on the ground in our area. I'm sure there'll be more news on that as well. And it looks like there's another wave of storms headed our way. So just be careful driving tonight. God bless, be safe, and we'll see you tomorrow.